Good morning. It's 9, and we will go ahead and start the lecture for the last pharmacology for this block, which we will talk about the different drugs working in the nephron. I'm sure you already had your proximal conduit tubule, distal tubule, right? Thick ascending limb of loop of Henle, and the collecting duct. So this lecture should make a lot more sense, and we will try to apply drugs and look into what happens to the electrolyte disturbances over there, okay? Or which drug could be mainly used in different scenarios. So in this one, obviously, we will talk about the drugs. All the questions will be on the mechanism of action, contraindication, uses, adverse effects of carbonic anhydrase inhibitor, loop diuretics.
Dr. Quadri?
Yes.
Do you mind just slowing down a little bit, please?
Okay. So we will talk about the drugs that work on the proximal convoluted tubule, on the thick ascending limb of loop of Henle, thiazides, which will work on the distal tubule, potassium-sparing diuretics. These are the diuretics working on the collecting duct. And the osmotic diuretics, basically, these are the drugs that are used preoperative surgery. And then the last one, we'll talk about ADH agonist and antagonist, and we'll talk about atrial natriuretic peptide. That's what ANP stands for, atrial natriuretic peptide. As name suggests, it's an atria. It is coming from the heart, not from the kidneys, okay? So in our body, whenever there is an increase in the sodium and water retention by our kidneys, it will increase our vascular volume, that means increase our blood volume, which will increase the blood going to the heart, that means increasing the venous return. And if the heart gets more blood, it is filled with more blood, increased cardiac filling. And if the ventricles are stretched within physiological limit, it have a strong contraction, increasing the cardiac output. And when cardiac output is increased, it increases the blood pressure. Okay, and we will talk about some of the drugs in this lecture about this. So there are certain, there are some other drugs we will talk about in this lecture. This drug list is not, I will say 100%, because I want to just focus on the main ill drugs in this one: furosemide, hydrochlorothiazide, amiloride, spironolactone, mannitol. These are some of the important drugs. But I will say for this lecture, go by your drug list. There is a drug list, and I think I gave about 10 drugs in this lecture for in the drug list. So before we proceed, let's clear some concepts. This section of nephron, it's always water permeable. Always water permeable. This section of nephron is impermeable.
Can you repeat that, please? The first part?
Yes. In the proximal convoluted tubule, the sections or the cells in this nephron are water permeable, always. All the time they are water permeable. In the ascending limb of loop of Henle, this section of nephron is water impermeable. So water cannot be reabsorbed. The last section of nephron depends on many factors, environmental factors, your lifestyle. And depending on those factors, it could be water permeable or water impermeable. For example, if you are drinking too much of fluid, you will produce more urine because this section of the nephron becomes water impermeable because we don't need all the volume in the blood. If you are thirsty, lost in a desert, doesn't have access to water for a while, This last segment of the nephron becomes permeable to water, thereby reabsorbing a lot of water. Before we proceed, the other important thing is any drug, any diuretic working in the PCT or the ascending limb of loop of Henle or the distal tubule, they increases potassium excretion in urine. You don't have to memorize these things, or this drug does this, this drug does that. Any drug working before the collecting duct increases potassium excretion in the urine, and any drug working in the collecting duct spares potassium. So that means increasing the potassium level in the blood, that by it causes potassium sparing diuretic. Okay? So what would be the side effect of a drug working in proximal convoluted tubule? Hypokalemia. Side effect of a drug working in ascending limb of loop of Henle, hypokalemia. Side effect of a drug working in distal tubule, hypokalemia. What is the side effect of a drug working in collecting duct? hyperkalemia. Okay? So you don't have to memorize a specific drug. All you need to know where the drug
is. Do you mind saying that again?
So any drug working in the PCT or the ascending limb of loop of Henle or the distal tibial, they all increases the potassium excretion causing hypokalemia. And any drug that is working in the collecting duct spares potassium causing hyperkalemia. Okay? In this lecture, I will talk about segments of the nephron because I cannot put one nephron in one slide. Okay? So that doesn't mean it is individual. A nephron is one unit. If something is happening in the PCT, it could have an effect in collecting duct. Okay? If something is not being reabsorbed in PCT, it will be reabsorbed downstream in the distal tibial or the ascending limb. So when you work with a nephron, realize that is a one unit. We talk about is individual compartments because it is easy to explain one segment at a time rather than putting a slide which gets really confusing. In the PCT, we will probably mainly talk about sodium and bicarb. There are many other things, okay? But I want to segment the information and say focus on sodium and your bicarb. And the basolateral side, you will have your sodium, potassium, ATPase. Every nephron cell has sodium, potassium, ATPase. When the sodium is reabsorbed from the cell back into the blood, the cell becomes poor in sodium, correct? But there is some sodium in the tubular lumen. So the concentration of sodium in tubular lumen is higher compared to the cell. And things move from high concentration to low concentration. But the sodium has which charge? It's a positive charge. Can a positive charge cross as a membrane? It cannot cross as a membrane. So it needs something. There it comes as sodium hydrogen exchanger. Okay, you already know this, but I'm going a little bit slow because these are important points. If you reabsorb one sodium, one hydrogen is secreted in the tubular lumen. If you reabsorb 100 sodium, how many protons will be secreted? 100 protons will be secreted, correct? And this proton will combine with the bicarb and converts into carbonic acid. And this carbonic acid is broken down into carbon dioxide and water. Carbon dioxide can easily cross the membrane and goes back into the cell. And the cell has water. So it combines with water and reverses the reaction and forms bicarb and proton. And this proton is recycled, okay? And the bicarb is reabsorbed. This is physiology. Let's apply a drug that blocks carbonic anhydrase. What should happen to the formation of CO2? Decrease. What should happen to the levels of CO2 in the cell? Decrease. What should happen to the carbonic acid? Less. What should happen to the bicarb here? Less. And so as the proton is less. If less proton is formed in the cell, less is secreted. What should happen to the sodium reabsorption? Decreases. So that means sodium stays in the tubular fluid and this sodium can move forward into other segments of the nephron. And some could appear in the urine, correct? Some could appear in the urine. So what is the side effect of this drug? Hyponatremia, okay? And if proton is secreted less, can it fuse with bicarb? Less proton will fuse with bicarb. What should happen to the bicarb? It will also move on to the next segment of the nephron. What is the side effect of this? Acidosis, because the bicarb is not being reabsorbed. So what is this drug is? Carbonic anhydrase inhibitor, and the name of the drug is acetazolamide. The way to remember is acetazolamide, acid. It causes acidosis. Acetazolamide, even though it says acetazolamide, I call it acetazolamide, because it causes acidosis, okay? Any questions? These are your notes, okay? And as I said, sodium will be excreted. Since I did not mention potassium, that doesn't mean potassium is not in the nephron. Some potassium is also being excreted, okay? But I'm trying to focus on the concepts more on getting into weeds of what happened to this small electrolyte level, what happened to this, because I want to focus on the concepts about and specificity. Proton is less in the urine. That means proton increases in the blood. Less bicarb causes acidosis, and therefore the pH. Please remember your pH, okay? Please remember your bicarb, okay? And your sodiums in here, all right? Any questions? Because you lose bicarb, blood become acidic, okay? That is called metabolic acidosis. This drug can be used to prevent acute mountain sickness. Specifically, this drug, sometimes professional, when they go to the climb the highest peak in the world, the higher you go, oxygen becomes less. Carbon dioxide starts to accumulate in the body. When increase in carbon dioxide, what happened to the bicarb? Increases in the bicarb, because carbon dioxide can fuse with water in the cell and increases carbonic acid, which is broken down into bicarb and proton, and the bicarb is reabsorbed. That becomes, our blood will be alkaline then. So you don't want that alkalinity in the blood. The blood pH need to be maintained. So those individuals who are going to climb the highest peaks, they take acetazolamide to maintain their bicarb level. The other one is in the loop diuretic. Loop diuretic causes alkalosis. We will talk about when we talk about loop diuretics and its relation with alpha intercalated cells. And it restores the acid-base balance in patients who is taking loop diuretics. And it is used for diuretic effect only if edema is accompanied by alkalosis. It's not just for edema. If there is an edema and an alkalosis, if the blood pH is too high in the blood, alkaline, and there is an edema, this is acetazolamide is a good choice of drug. And what are the side effects? Is basically you will have hypokalemia, hyponatremia, and acidosis. Any questions on ascending limb of Loper-Finley? In the thick ascending limb of Loper-Finley, let's focus on your sodium, potassium, and chloride. As you all know, we have sodium, potassium, 2 chloride. What is the charge on sodium? Positive. Potassium, positive. Chloride, negative. But we have 2 chlorides and 2 positive. What should be the net charge in the lumen? Neutral, right? And obviously, sodium is reabsorbed by the sodium-potassium ATPase. The more sodium it reabsorbs, the more potassium comes back into the cell. We also have ROMK channels in this thick ascending limb of Loper-Finley, and the potassium has a positive charge. When the positive coming into a neutral tubular lumen, what should be the charge now? Positive. What is the charge on magnesium? Calcium? Positive, positive? Repel. Okay? So through the paracellular route, magnesium and calcium are reabsorbed. Let's take a drug and block sodium potassium 2 chloride. Will there be a recycling of potassium now? So what should happen to the positivity in the tubular lumen? Will it be more positive or less positive? Less positive, right? If it is less positive, can magnesium and calcium be reabsorbed? So it stays in the lumen. That means since you are blocking sodium, potassium, 2 chloride, the sodium move forward, potassium move forward, chlorides move forward to the next segment, so as magnesium and calcium also move forward into the next segment in the nephron, and some could end up in urine. So you should tell me what are the side effects of this drug. hyponatremia, hypokalemia, hypomagnesemia, hypocalcemia. Okay? When this potassium moves forward in the alpha intercalated cells, because after this there is distal tubule, but let's jump ahead a little. Okay? In the alpha intercalated cells, okay, there is a proton potassium exchanger. Okay? So when this potassium comes to alpha intercalated cells, it could go into alpha intercalated cells, right? And it will secrete proton into the tubular lumen. Okay? This is not happening in the thick ascending limb of Loop perfectly. It is happening in alpha intercalated cells. But since I told you the nephron is one unit, it has effects downstream. And when the proton is secreted, you can come back to our equation where carbon dioxide forms carbonic acid, and this is broken down into proton and bicarb. If proton is secreted in the tubular lumen, what should happen to the bicarb? It will be reabsorbed by the body. So what is the side effect of this drug? Alkalosis. Even though I'm not showing in this slide, we will talk about alpha intercalated cells and chemicals, but I just want to clear the concept here. Okay? It is because of carbon dioxide and water in the alpha intercalated cells, but not in the ascending limb of Loop of Henle. The side effects is hyponatremia, hypokalemia, hypomagnesemia, hypocalcemia, and metabolic alkalosis. Okay? And this drug, please remember your furosemide, please remember these two drugs, furosemide and ethacrenic acid. These are your notes. As I mentioned, sodium, some potassium is also lost. Some calcium is also, since we are not talking about other anions, that doesn't mean they are not there. Glucose is increased because there is an increase in gluconeogenesis by the liver. That's the reason why glucose is increased. Uric acid is increased because this drug competes with the excretion of urea. So when they compete with excretion of the urea, and furosemide and ethacrenic acid take preference over the urea excretion, urea starts to develop in the body. And the uric acid increases. Please remember your pH. Blood pH will be alkaline. Blood pH will be alkaline. This drug is used in edema, especially in the heart failure patients, all in to reduce the pulmonary. We didn't even talk about hypertension yet, right? And these drugs, acetazolamide and furosemide, are not used to manage hypertension. They are used to manage edema. Acetazolamide manage edema when there is an alkalosis. Loop diuretic manages edema in the heart failure patients. Okay? Adverse effect, volume depletion. Obviously, you are losing a lot of water along with the solutes. Hypotension. We talked about hypokalemia, hypocalcemia, hypomagnesemia, hyperuricemia, and metabolic alkalosis. With furosemide, okay, this is with furosemide. Furosemide causes ototoxicity. Ringing in ears. If a patient complains about ringing in ears after taking furosemide, what would you do? You would switch them to ethacrenic acid. Ethacrenic acid has a side effect is sulfa allergy. If the patient shows signs of sulfa allergy, you will switch them to furosemide. If they are allergic to both of them, you can use other drug is hydrochlorothiazide. Okay? NSAIDs, ibuprofen, okay, can decrease the response of loop diuretic. Okay? Loop diuretic, what is the function of a diuretic? To excrete water. NSAIDs decreases the renal blood flow. Okay? When blood flow is reduced, what happened to the pressure in the renal artery? Decreases. What happened to renin? Angiotensin II increases. And when angiotensin 2 increases, it reabsorbs more water from proximal convoluted tubule. It increases the activity of sodium hydrogen exchanger. Loop diuretic is trying to excrete water, whereas proximal convoluted tubule is reabsorbing water. And how much water is being reabsorbed from PCT? 65% to 70%. You are trying to lose 15%, but reabsorbing 70. The net effect will be more water in the body. So NSAIDs, long-standing, I'm not saying one time I'm having a headache, I'm taking an ibuprofen. It's not that way. Long-standing usage of NSAIDs, especially in arthritis patients and somebody who need to use a painkiller for a long time, especially if they are taking this loop diuretic or thiazide diuretic, okay, they may experience diuretic failure, which means that even though they are taking a diuretic on a prescribed dose, it may not be able to mediate the edema. In the distal tubule, we will focus on our calcium, sodium, and chloride. We have sodium chloride co-transporter, okay, and the sodium is reabsorbed by sodium potassium ATPase. Chloride has their chloride channel to go back into the blood. And since we are having calcium, we have calcium channels. And this calcium is reabsorbed by a calcium exchanger. Okay? When the calcium is reabsorbed, it is exchanged for a sodium. Sodium comes in, calcium goes out. If we block sodium chloride, okay, what should happen to the sodium from sodium? It should not be there, right? There is no sodium coming from sodium chloride co-transporter. Okay? And the sodium remains in the lumen, chloride remains in the lumen, and they move forward into the next segment of the nephron. However, this sodium from the sodium-calcium exchanger is reabsorbed. When more sodium is reabsorbed, what should happen to the calcium reabsorption? Should it increase or decrease? Increase. And if the calcium is increasing from the cell to the blood, the cell becomes poor in calcium. So the calcium from the tubular lumen moves into the cell because things move from high concentration to low concentration. So what are the side effects? Hypercalcemia, because more calcium is reabsorbed. Hyponatremia. Hypercalcemia. And obviously there are some potassiums here. I'm not showing you potassiums here. But those potassiums again go and interact with the alpha intercalated cells, similar to what we saw in the loop of Henle, and exchange for a proton. Proton secreted into the tubular lumen and bicarb is reabsorbed. Similar concept with the loop of Henle. So side effects are hypercalcemia, hyponatremia, okay, and hyper, or you can, like, not hyper, but metabolic alkalosis. Please remember your hydrochlorothiazide. This is a really, really important drug, and this drug is a antihypertensive. This can be used in management of hypertension. These are your notes. Please remember your sodiums. Protons, pH, okay? And again, this drug also compete with the excretion of urea, and urea starts to build up in the body and causing hyperuricemia, and it is not good in gout because you will have toe pains, the thumb will pain, joint pain, all those things. And also glucose is increased because of increase in gluconeogenesis. Liver starts to make more glucose because if you are excreting water, you're also excreting some glucose, and the liver will start to make new glucose, causing increase in glucose. This is the treatment, okay? This is one of the most important drug in antihypertensive, along with ACE, okay? ACE inhibitor, ARBs, thiazide diuretic. One of the most common prescribed drugs, okay? As the initial, or I'll say first choice of drugs is ACE, ARBs, thiazides. If the patient needs to be on two drugs, One has to be a one has to be a diuretic. If this drug is not contraindicated, it will be a thiazide diuretic. ACE plus thiazides. ARBs plus thiazides. Okay? It can also be combined with loop diuretics in heart failure. Obviously, you don't want to maximize the dose of loop diuretic. If the edema is not maintained or not been treated, you can combine with loop diuretics. It is used in nephrogenic diabetes insipidus. What is nephrogenic diabetes insipidus? You know central diabetes insipidus, when there is no ADH from the posterior pituitary gland. What is nephrogenic diabetes insipidus? When kidney doesn't respond to ADH, what would happen when kidney does not respond to ADH? Excreting water. Why are we using a diuretic to treat that? What is the function of diuretic? Excrete water. In nephrogenic diabetes insipidus, the patient is already excreting water. Why are we using a diuretic to treat a disease which is excreting water? Yes. It will help reabsorb sodium in the PCD. Yes, because you have to remember the percentages. How much percent is reabsorbed in each segment? Collecting duct, 5%. Distal tubule, 10%. Let's suppose if 5% already been lost, I give somebody a thiazide diuretic, they are losing 15% in total. But when you lose water, you also decreases blood volume. If blood volume is less, renin increases. If renin increases, Ang2 increases. Ang2 increases, Ang2 will increase sodium hydrogen exchanger activity to reabsorb more sodium. And I mentioned proximal convoluted tubule is permeable to water. And instead of 70%, they will reabsorb more than 70%. You lose 15, but you reabsorb more than 70 there. So the net effect will be reabsorption of more water. Okay? Adverse effect is hypokalemia, hyperuricemia, and hypercalcemia will be there. Use in patients when there is GFR or serum creatinine or creatinine clearance is nothing but GFR, is greater than 30 ml. Okay, that is one of the most important consideration you have to take into account when using this drug. We don't have to go into detail about what level constitutes to stage 1 kidney disease, stage 2 kidney disease, stage 3. That is not the target of this pharmacology lectures. We will talk more about stages of kidney disease in second year. But can you tell me if you see a 30 ml per minute GFR, is it less or normal? It's very less. Can you, just looking at the number, can you tell this patient has kidney dysfunction? Right? And which drug can you use in kidney dysfunction? You can use a thiazide. I'm just talking about kidney dysfunction. Thiazide is not used in kidney dysfunction. It is used in management of hypertension. Which drug can be used when kidneys are having some disease, kidney disease? Which one? Yes, ACE inhibitors is renoprotective. So if there's a kidney dysfunction, you use ACE inhibitor. Okay? And obviously you will not be combining with any antiarrhythmic because it prolongs the QT interval causing torsade de pons. The last segment of collecting duct, which in the principal cell, we will talk about two drugs here. Which is, one is amiloride, the other one is spironolactone. All the other segments have some kind of transporter, exchanger, right? This one has channels. This one has channels. When the sodium potassium is being reabsorbed, the cell becomes poor in sodium, and the sodium from the tubular lumen goes back into the cell, and the potassium is excreted. And aldosterone, when it binds to its receptor, increases the reabsorption of sodium and excretion of potassium. Okay? If we use a drug that will prevent the binding of aldosterone to its receptor, can aldosterone mediate its effect? What is the effect of aldosterone? To reabsorb sodium, to reabsorb water, and excrete potassium. So what would be the reverse of this? Excrete sodium, excrete water and spare the potassium. That's the reason it's called potassium sparing diuretic. Right? If spironolactone is binding, then you will not have effects of aldosterone. So the sodium will be lost in urine. Okay? Potassium will start to build up in the blood. And who follows sodium? Water is also lost in urine. So side effect, hyponatremia, hyperkalemia. Hyponatremia, hyperkalemia. The other drug is your amiloride. Amiloride blocks sodium channel. If the sodium channel is blocked, which is epithelial sodium channel is blocked, can it reabsorb sodium? It cannot reabsorb sodium. If sodium is not being reabsorbed, potassium is not being secreted into the cell, and the potassium starts to build up in the body, causing hyperkalemia. And these are called potassium sparing diuretic. The other cell we have been talking about in terms of the bicarb reabsorption is intercalated cell. In the intercalated cell, you have carbon dioxide, water, which is increasing the carbonic acid, and it is broken down into proton and bicarb. Bicarb is reabsorbed, and we have proton ATPase. Spironolactone blocks proton ATPase. If it is blocking proton ATPase, what should happen to the proton? It will start increasing in the cell. When there's too much of proton, it will slowly trickle into the blood. What should happen to the blood pH? Blood pH become acidic. So what is the side effect of spironolactone? Hyponatremia, hyperkalemia, metabolic acidosis. Okay? These are the side effects of spironolactone. And we talked about proton and potassium pump when we were actually spoke about loop diuretics and thiazide diuretics in terms of alkalosis. Okay? So these are your notes for the drugs that we talked. Please remember your amiloride, which is an epithelial sodium channel blocker. It is used to prevent the loss of potassium with thiazide diuretics, which adverse effect is acidosis, hyperkalemia. Okay? Do not combine spironolactone with an ACE inhibitor and also some of the potassium supplements, because it will increase potassium in the blood and may cause arrhythmias, okay? Because there will be too much of hyperkalemia. Spironolactone, it blocks the ability of aldosterone to activate mineralocorticoid receptor. It can be used in edema in heart failure. It can be used in hypertension. Okay, as an add-on drug, not the first choice of drug. You can add spironolactone to the other drugs. In heart failure, it is a very important drug, because usually in heart failure patients, they are in multiple drugs. They could be taking ACE inhibitor. They could be taking the thiazides. And spironolactone actually decreases their mortality. It has shown in studies that spironolactone reduces mortality in heart failure. So heart failure patients could be on multiple drugs. One could be a spironolactone. If there is an hyperplasia of adrenal gland, okay, and there is excessive release of aldosterone, obviously you will have hypokalemia, hypernatremia, and the side effects of aldosterone. So it could be prevented by spironolactone. The similar drug interaction is additive effect with potassium-sparing drugs and potassium supplements. So one another side effect is gynecomastia. Okay, in males, it can cause gynecomastia because it will increase the estrogen in the body. It will cleave the estrogen from its estrogen binding protein and increases estrogen, causing gynecomastia in males. So we will have the other drug, which is the eplerenone in the males. Spironolactone could be used in females, and because increase in estrogen, the side effect is gynecomastia. Obviously, it will take over time. It's not going to happen in a couple of weeks. Drug interaction, ACE inhibitor and NSAIDs reduces the diuretic efficacy because it decreases the renal blood flow. Any questions on PCT, drugs, ascending limb of loop of Henle, thiazides, or the potassium sparing diuretics. Yes. So how does PCT drugs cause this? Hypokalemia. They don't cause hyperkalemia. So the potassium is lost. Okay, I did not mention a lot of electrolytes, as I'm telling you. I did not mention glucose. I did not mention calcium. I did not mention potassium, and specifically talking about that is intentional. Okay, but the potassium is lost from PCT. It does not cause hyperkalemia, it causes hypokalemia. The only drugs that causes hyperkalemia are drugs working in the collecting duct, which is amiloride and spironolactone. Okay?
Can we make sure that Harrogate is asking questions on their mic so Knoxville can hear them?
Okay. But if not, then I'll repeat the question. The question was about potassium levels in PCTs with carbonic anhydrase inhibitors. The next segment is osmotic diuretic. Osmotic diuretic, as the name suggests,
we have a question real fast.
Yes.
So for patients with heart failure, you said not to that you use like spironolactone with ACE inhibitors, but I thought before you had said not to use spironolactone with ACE inhibitors due to potassium.
So there are, as I said, depending on the potassium levels, right? How bad the potassium levels are. If the potassium levels are within the normal limits, yes, definitely, because it reduces the mortality. If the potassium levels slightly increases, still not a concern, yes, you can use it. But the potassium levels are too high, that is a risk of being in arrhythmia, you definitely want to avoid any other drug that increases the potassium. Okay? So the lab values are very important when we talk about heart failure. And we will talk about heart failure in detail in your second year. Okay? In osmotic diuretic, was there any other question? In osmotic diuretic, one drug I expect you to remember is your mannitol. Mannitol increases the osmolarity of the tubular lumen. Okay? What is being filtered? Mannitol is not reabsorbed. It is only filtered, not secreted. So when this is filtered, the urine osmolarity increases. And the water rushes from the cell into the tubular lumen, making the flow of the urine fast. When the flow of the urine is fast, because you're adding a lot of water, can the cells reabsorb sodium, potassium? Because the flow is so fast that the cells are unable to reabsorb a lot of electrolytes, including sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, chloride, bicarb, and phosphate. So this drug is mainly used before a surgery. This drug cannot be used for managing edema. This drug cannot be used for managing hypertension, because imagine if the flow of urine is so fast and you are pulling water out of your cell, the person will be dehydrated. So you cannot have a person dehydrated for a very, very long time, right? I cannot be thirsty 24/7. So this mainly acts in the PCT, okay? Because there's a lot of permeability in that segment of the nephron, not reabsorbed by the nephron, and reduces the pressure before a surgery. The mechanism of action is by increasing the osmolarity in the proximal convoluted tubule, and adverse effect is hypotension, dehydration, because there's a lot of loss of water. Obviously, the patient will be dehydrated and loss of blood volume will be hypotensive. This is the review slide for all the drugs that we talked today. Okay, remember your pH, carbonic anhydrase inhibitor, acidosis, potassium sparing, acidosis. But the drugs working in the ascending limb of loop of Henle and distal tubule causes alkalosis. The next segment is your ADH or vasopressin, one or the same. ADH increases the water reabsorption, not the sodium, just the water. ADH comes and binds to its V2 receptor, increases the cyclic AMP. Increased cyclic AMP will move the aquaporin 2 channels to fuse to the membrane, and this aquaporin 2 channels move the water from the lumen back into the body. Just water, not sodium. It is antidiuretic hormone released by the posterior pituitary. This hormone is released when there is increase in Ang2. When you are thirsty, angiotensin increases. Hyperosmolarity, hypovolemia, hypotension, all these things can cause increase in ADH. Increase in ADH causes increase in the renal fluid reabsorption, increased blood volume, increases the blood pressure. And it also has some minor effects on V1 receptor, which is in the smooth muscle cell, causes some vasoconstriction. Okay? But the ADH, the release of ADH is important. When it is released? When there is a lot of angiotensin II or hypotension. In hypotension, blood pressure is less. Obviously, you want to maintain the blood pressure, and thereby increasing the reabsorption of water maintains the blood volume, increases the blood pressure. V3, V1, you don't have to know the variants V1A, V1B. Just know your V2. That is the most important concept that we will be talking in terms of the reabsorption of water. Vasopressin. As you all know, if there is a lack of ADH, vasopressin or desmopressin can be used. These can be used in central diabetes insipidus, and this can be mainly used in nocturnal enuresis, both of them, and some of the side effects will be water intoxication, injection site necrosis, risk of blood loss, because it affects the clotting factors, and that increases the risk of blood clots. But I expect you to remember the name of the drugs when, especially the vasopressin and desmopressin, and when they are used, okay? Aquauretic, as the name suggests, aqua, water, excretion of water. I'm not talking about sorry, excretion of water. This basically binds to the V2 receptor. So this actually stops the binding of ADH to V2 receptor, thereby decreasing the cyclic AMP, decreases the aquaporin 2 channels, and decreases the water reabsorption. These are used in euvolemic or hyponatremia. When the blood volume is okay, it's normal, but there is hyponatremia, less sodium, okay? And to maintain the osmolarity of the blood, we can use tolvaptan or aquauretic, and thereby maintaining the blood levels of the sodium by excreting some water. Okay, not a lot of water, because it only excretes about 5% of water, or hypervolemic hyponatremia. There's too much of fluid in your body and your sodium levels are low. Or euvolemic, this means there's the right amount of fluid in the body, but the sodium levels are low. We want to maintain the balance between the sodium and the water. Okay? Adverse effect is hypotension and hypovolemia. These are the primary adverse effects that I expect you to remember as far as tolvaptan is concerned. Okay. The next segment is natriuretic peptide, atrial. Natriuretic. As the name suggests, it is from atria, from the heart. Natri, it excretes some sodium. Uretic, ureses. Okay, when this is released by the atria, it helps in excretion of sodium and water. When it is released by the atria, when there is a tension in the heart, when there is a tension in the heart, in heart failure patients, there is too much of tension in the heart. And this, they release atrial natriuretic peptide or brain natriuretic peptide. It is one and the same, okay? Atrial natriuretic peptide or brain natriuretic peptide, both are released by the heart. It just say brain because it is found in the brain of a pig. That is why it's called brain natriuretic peptide, okay? When there's a tension in the heart or too much of stimulation by the norepinephrine, ANP and BNP increases, they decreases the renin, decrease Ang2, decrease the blood volume, and decreases the blood pressure. Okay? It is mainly released in the heart failure patients when tension is too high in the heart from the atria, not from the ventricles. A BNP analog is your nesiritide. This is a low yield drug. Okay, mechanism of action is vasodilation with some diuresis. It is used in decompensated heart failure. We will talk about this drug more in when we talk about specific diseases like heart failure in your second year. Okay, for these lectures may not be the focus of the heart failure, okay? But the thiazides, all your diuretics are important. All your osmotic diuretics is important, okay? ADH is important for this lecture. This is a review slide for your osmotic diuretic, what happened to the sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium's excretion, okay? When we talk about diuretics, we'll talk about excretion, not reabsorption, okay? When there is a loop diuretic, there is a lot of excretion. Chlorothiazide or thiazide, there is some excretion, okay? But these drugs, carbonic anhydrase and loop diuretics are used in edema. This drug can be used as hypertension and edema, okay? This drug is an add-on therapy to hypertension and heart failure patients, okay? Any question? Any question on the diuretics? Yes.
Yes, is there any specific pathology that aquaretics would be given instead of just treating the patient with higher sodium intake?
Is there any pathological condition where diuretics are given?
The aquaretics, like...
Aquaretics are given. It is only given when there is an imbalance between your body fluid and the sodium. Okay? Only in hypervolemic natremia or euvolemic hyponatremia. That's the only place it can be given there. So in this question, we have a 50-year-old female with a history of hypertension. Okay? This patient is already hypertensive. Complaints of weakness. It's a regular complaint. It's a weakness. Okay? Blood pressure is 130, which is within the normal limits when they are taking the antihypertensive medication. Her current medication includes hydrochlorothiazide, which is fine. Okay? It's a good drug. Hydrochlorothiazide. Laboratory serum potassium levels are 3.1. Normal is 3.5 to 5. Which is actually low. Potassium is less. The doctor decides to add another medication to her regimen. Which drug is most appropriate? Why is weakness? Why is this patient complaining about weakness? Because of low potassium. Of the following, which drug could be used to prevent the potassium loss? Can ameliorate will be used in the treatment of potassium loss? Because it is a potassium sparing diuretic. Acetazolamide causes hypokalemia, decreases potassium. Furosemide, hypokalemia. Ethacrenic acid, decreases potassium. Tolvaptan has no effect on potassium. The only choice of drug is your ameliorite. You can combine hydrochlorothiazide with an ameliorite when there is too much of potassium loss and you want to maintain the potassium levels in the blood. Okay? All right. That brings to the end of our lecture. Do you have any questions for me from Knoxville or Harrigan? I have my office hours on Friday, but I'm always available by email. Okay? If you have any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
So I was